energy back to the workplace.
You just heard the Human System commercial. You also heard a little bit there from the Fall Creek Valley News. That was about Robert Maxwell. We took that off a broadcast of Rock 101.6, the Fall Creek Valley radio station. Also, you heard the Westworld theme, the main soundtrack to the show. And we have here in the studio, before I tell who's in the studio, the show Westworld is just phenomenal. It gives me such hope and excitement for the consciousness of what's going out there with creativity and the themes that are presented in this show, because, oh man, you see these robots questioning their own mortality, and you start imagining what if the roles were switched, where we were the robots that were within this realm, thinking that all this stuff is real, that we're experiencing these real things, we're feeling the real pain when we're stabbed or when we're shot, yet there's something outside of us that's monitoring it all and sort of giving us little gifts that kind of lead us along our path. And oh my gosh, it's on HBO, but I was able to find some site online to check out this show, and it's only 10 episodes, but man, like, oof. It's written by Jonathan Nolan, and Jonathan Nolan is brothers with Christopher Nolan, and those guys, and once I realized that, I realized, oh my gosh, no wonder the show is the way that it is. These were the guys who made Memento, these are the guys who made Inception, I mean, all these movies that have to do with these amazing concepts of consciousness. And what's beautiful within the show is that they've got a piano that plays songs. You'll hear a song and you'll go, oh my God, that's familiar, where do I know that? And you realize, oh, they're playing Radiohead right now, but that's phenomenal. Or they go, what, that's House of the Rising Sun? Oh my God, that's Painted Black by frickin' the Rolling Stones. Like, this is amazing. And they're putting it, and they season it with this, like, this Western vibe. Okay, which I can get into a little bit more later, but I just want to say, we have here in the studio, we have Ciara Berlin, and we also have Nicholas Nickleby, our favorite station manager of all time. Now, Nicholas, you recognize that theme song as I was playing it. Have you been watching Westworld?
Yes, I have.
What are your thoughts about it?
It's my favorite show.
Oh my God, it's astounding, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a mind bender.
No,
it's a mind bender.
I couldn't get enough of it. I'm sad it's gone.
Because you're the good news, and it's going to be like another 2 years till they come out with season two. So then you're wondering, oh my God, where do they go from there? Now, the cool thing is, because after I watched the series, I went and I rewatched the old movie Westworld just to see what, because I'm like, okay, they got to leave some kind of little Easter eggs within the TV show that have to do with the movie. There's got to be something. And you'll see little hints, little things that do match up with it. And, have you seen the movie? Did you see the old movie?
Actually, I just rented.
Yeah. It's great, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you see all the little parallels. God, it's just brilliant because it's one of those things where one revelation hits you and you go, what? I didn't see that one coming. And all of a sudden, you get struck with another one. You're going, okay, I can't believe they just did that. And then all of a sudden, it just keeps happening like that. You're going, oh my God, these people are so courageous and just diving in with this commitment to these kinds of choices and just going, okay, we're doing this. You're watching this. This is happening. You're going to just go ahead and deal with it. It's just like, man. And you know you're in good hands because Jonathan Nolan, and I think it's his wife, put this whole thing together, and it's just so amazingly intellectual. Ciara and I were talking on the way here about, you know, some of these new movies and some of these new TV shows that are coming out. You just saw Doctor Strange, right? Oh, here, there's your microphone.
Yeah, we just saw Doctor Strange yesterday. Thank you.
What kind of concepts did you notice in that movie that are maybe, you know, outside of the realm of what we normally see in the media?
Well, it was really, really amazing. With Doctor Strange, they actually showed him coming out of his own body and watching himself. So it was really cool. It was almost like a ghost-like image projecting.
So was he having an astral projection? Was he
out
of body experience?
Yeah, and they actually labeled it as an astral projection experience, which was really amazing.
It is amazing because you don't see that in movies. I was just thinking about this the other day. I'm thinking, you know, I want to see a movie where they show astral projection, the things that these people learn when they're going off into the cosmos. And the fact that they do this in Doctor Strange is awesome.
Yeah, definitely. And they had some really cool psychedelic scenes, too, where he was exploring different dimensions and going outside of himself and exploring what's real, what's not real. And it's just spectacular.
It gives me such a... It gives me such a huge joy and such a great feeling in knowing that these are the newer... I mean, I think it's like they say cream rises to the top. I think this is the stuff that is going to become more of a commonplace kind of... more commonplace themes, more themes that deal with consciousness, responsibility, you know, just awareness in general, tuning in our other senses, and presenting us with things that have been talked about and known in all kinds of cultures for, you know, who knows how many years, that were such a commonplace thing to all these other cultures that still to this day, a lot of folks have a hard time wrapping their minds around because it doesn't fit within their belief systems.
Yeah, it's really difficult to kind of change around in your mind exactly like new perspectives and new ideals when you've been living with certain ideals for your whole life. You need to be really open to those experiences and open to new people to be able to absorb and process that.
What I realize is that once a person realizes what the thoughts they carry around with them do to them and how it affects their body and their interactions with others and their just entire environment and reality around them, once they're willing to come to a point of that and go, okay, why am I choosing to bring this story along with me throughout my life? Why am I choosing to bring this victim mentality, for instance, or the idea of going, oh, these are the cards that are just dealt to me. This is just what I, you know, this is just how it is, and it's just what I have to just live with. And, you know, some people have luck, and, you know, I'm always the one who gets rained on. And once a person realizes that they are actually the master of making the choice as to whether they want to be that victim or be the one who's actually going, hey, you know what? I'm not a victim after all. Then I think then a lot of doors open. You know, a lot of stuff opens up for them. Nicholas, did you happen to see, I was talking about Lost. Were you here when I was talking about Lost by any chance?
Don't recall.
Did you see Lost? Mm-hmm. Okay, another phenomenal mind-bending show. I was sick for about a week, and I go, okay, this is the week that I'm going to finally watch the Lost show. I'm going to finally watch it. I've always wanted to. And I watched almost an entire season a day. And just waking up first thing in the morning, watching Lost, going to sleep, having the dreams, waking back up, just living in that reality, And I was so proud of the creators of that show and the networks that chose to allow that kind of show to go on the air, because it had such amazing concepts in it. Amazing concepts. So many times people, I think we're getting closer to a point where people are going to start using the word synchronicity and serendipity. That's my prediction. But in the meantime, the word coincidence will suffice, I think. But a lot of times they'll use that word like coincidence, and they're going, oh, what a coincidence, we see each other, and ja-ja-ja-ja. But what the whole thing was boiling down to was the coincidence is not just this cute little thing that's like, oh, look at this little quinky-dink, but it is something that is an omen. It is a sign that's leading them on their path along what's going on. And watching that show, man, it makes me feel so good. And Westworld, that's another one. So I think that there's going to be a big shift in the consciousness and the way that people start applying these concepts to their own lives. Now, Ciara, you, I met you long ago.
Yeah.
I substitute taught for you.
Yeah, you did. It was.
I was your substitute teacher. What grade were you in when I met you?
Oh, gosh. I think I was in maybe sixth or seventh grade. So, and now I'm 20. So it's been, I can't even do the math.
But it's been amazing, like.
It's really amazing to think that we've known each other that long. And now we're back here together at the same start, but doing something totally different.
Well, it's been cool seeing how you've evolved throughout the years. Like, I'm friends with some of the students that I used to, you know, substitute teach in the classes for, and to see the way that they've grown throughout the years has just been so exciting to me, because one of the big things I'd tell the students in the classrooms was that, you know, they are the future of America. They're the ones who are going to be running things in the country and making the rules, and, you know, to just jump on their passions and talents now and just start doing what they absolutely love doing rather than just, I don't know, rather than just kind of living a blasé kind of, you know, generic kind of life. And whether that stuck with anyone or not, I don't know that, but I do know that the few students that I've kept in contact with, I've seen amazing things happen with them. Now, you got into storyboard art.
Right.
What did you learn that stuff from?
Right now I've been self-teaching. I've been taking a few classes over at Concept Design Academy in Pasadena, but for the most part I've been trying to learn myself and look at other artists that I admire and go off of that.
Did you work at, was it Warner Brothers?
Yeah, I actually did have an internship with Warner Brothers, and I assisted the director and the line producer, the HR manager, and I was lucky enough to be able to shadow some really amazing artists over there, such as Dan Haskett, which is an old-time Disney artist.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he's a character designer, and I was totally inspired. I met my current boyfriend over there, Shane Glines, and he was also another huge inspiration towards me. And it's just amazing where just getting that job where it'll lead you. Who knows if I'd still be doing animation if I didn't get that job, or what else I'd be doing.
Were you able to meet some of these people? Like, for instance, what was the name of the character design guy that you had met? What was his name again?
Dan Haskett.
So what kind of Disney things did he work on that we'd be familiar with?
He worked on Little Mermaid as the lead character designer, I believe so.
Cool.
So that's really, really cool.
It's awesome when you can see what's behind the curtain, right? You can be like, okay, this is what's going on. These are the inner workings of what's going on behind the curtain. And the fact that you actually met that guy, you go, oh my God, I'm meeting the face of the person who made these characters that I watched in the movie.
Exactly, and you're working alongside with him and seeing what he does and how he does it, and to have the opportunity to sit in his desk and draw. I was very fortunate.
That's just amazing. So now you have an Instagram account.
Yes, I do. Just made it. I didn't really post any art yet, but I will soon.
Are you going to post your old art? Are you going to post stuff that you've done already?
You know, I have kind of mixed feelings about that. I'd like to post some new art and kind of fresher, but I still want to keep digging in deeper to the older art I've been doing. Like you mentioned the ghost art earlier today, which I played around on Photoshop with, and I made some character designs for an original story. And I'd love to keep digging in deeper with that.
Gosh, even if this just popped in my brain, even if you were, because I remember seeing your storyboards of the of that whole thing. The girl, she opens up.
Oh, right, her lunchbox.
Yes.
And she has spaghetti, meatballs, which was actually like worms and something else, and intestines.
So I can imagine, like, even if you were to post each of those, bam, 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 you know, as a series of, you know, up there where here's the story, you know, maybe each new day or each new week you put up a new page from the storyboards. How many
panels are in the storyboard?
Yeah.
It really depends on the story. It could range anywhere from like as little as 60 panels if you're doing a short lunch sequence like that, or if you actually want to show a whole scene with character development and transformation, it would maybe be about like 180 panels or 200, depending on how elaborate you want it to be.
How many panels is that? Is that one?
That would be about 200 panels, or 150, anywhere between there.
What would be your ideal, let's just imagine your future self is doing exactly what would just, like, you know, excite you. What would that be?
What would excite me?
Yeah, let's say your future self is already doing this. Like, would it be doing storyboards for movies, or would it be with animating your own cartoon?
I would love to photograph and shoot real life. I've been very inspired lately by David Lynch, Twin Peaks, and other movies like that. And it's just, it's amazing. Like, how did you pronounce it? Synchronicities?
Oh, synchronicities,
yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'd love to create moments like that and make people question, what's going on there, or, oh, that's strange. I'd like to make people start questioning, like, the outside world and themselves and just the situation they're in.
That was the cool thing about David Lynch with Twin Peaks. I loved how much he spoke about these amazing sort of cosmic concepts through the mind of Agent Cooper, mm-hmm. where, like, I'm thinking specifically, you know, where he goes, okay, guys, I had a dream. You know, this is what we're going to do today.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
got the chalkboard out there. And, you know, he's like, okay, you know, read a name off, and then I'm going to throw a rock, and if it hits the bottle, that's a name that we're going to pay attention
right.
to. And I just love it because they're going, okay, well, I don't know what Agent Cooper is doing right now, but let's just go with it, you know. And the fact that he showed that as, like, you know, here's this FBI agent's, here's his method. You know, here's something that can be done. I think it was awesome because he was able to kind of cleverly slip in these cosmic these concepts into his show.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And also, we were talking earlier about how David Lynch just spontaneously decides to make choices. Like when Bob was hiding, there was a scene where Bob was hiding behind Laura Palmer's bed because he was cleaning out something, but David Lynch actually started shooting, so he had to kind of hide, but his face still showed, which seemed to be very creepy, and David Lynch just said, hold it. We're going to keep that
yeah.
rolling.
Yeah.
And I think when you told me that was completely amazing. It's like, oh, so something that would have been trash or garbage, or maybe he could have even been fired over it. It's amazing that now he's the star of the show.
Yeah.
And that he was able to just manipulate it and change it to match that.
It's beautiful, yeah, because David Lynch's philosophy fell right in line with Agent Cooper's philosophy. You know, it's like he was going right along with it.
Yeah.
One of the interviews that I would hear that I saw with David Lynch was that he loves what he calls the happy accidents. And that you just described is one of those happy accidents where he looks forward to those technical difficulties. He views them as these gifts. There is Lost Highway. Did you see Lost Highway yet? Did you see that
not
one?
Yet, but I will soon.
There's a scene where and this isn't giving anything away, but there's a scene where Baltazar Getty's character, I think it's Pete Dayton, I don't know, I forgot his name in there, but they shot a scene with his group of friends walking into it was like an outside establishing shot, and they were walking into the diner. Now, a day or two later, they shot the close-ups, but it had rained. So there was water all over the place, and he's going, mm-hmm. oh, gosh, how are we going to match this shot? What are we going to do? So what he did was he put two people in the background with hoses, so they're fighting each other with water. So it gave the idea, oh, that's why the ground is wet, because these guys are shooting water at each
right.
other. So he took, you know, as they say, turning the lemons into lemonade. I'd like to go the opposite way. I think the true sorcerer can actually create lemons. lemonade out of lemons. Taking a liquidy thing and actually creating a lemon out of it, right? So you can actually hold it in your hand and go, oh my gosh, here it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, he made something that was a mess into something solid and
yeah.
actually usable. It's really cool.
And I've realized is that the more that we trust that process of how things unfold, which is like the impetus behind this show, which is I like to, and we're talking about this on the way here, is that being okay with process, like appreciating that process. You know, we've always heard the phrase, it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. Well, okay, another word for journey is process. It's being okay with watching how things unfold in the way that it needs to unfold. And when there's impatience involved, what happens then is that then things get forced. You know, then things like don't really necessarily turn out in a smooth flowing way. You're like, ah, this has to happen now. And then what happens? Now it's like rushing a chef rushing the baker in the kitchen. It's like, you know, he's making this wonderful pumpkin pie. I'm like, come on now, hurry up, make it already. Come on. Well, wait, we didn't even warm up. We got to warm up the oven. We got to, you know, I'm still stirring this stuff. You know, man, let me make it when I need to make it, because otherwise it's not going to taste the the way that I'm intending it to taste. So it's being okay with that process and accepting those things that might seem like a mistake or something that went wrong, and just incorporating it. And that's why, like, I like to play on the show. I'll play a riff, you know, maybe some riff that I just popped in my brain on the guitar, and I go, okay, let's play it on the show. Because maybe two or three shows later, I'll play the full song that riff came from. You know, I don't know, a revelation that I have as I'm walking down the street. Okay, here's this. Okay, let's play it on the show. Because that might turn into something. That might turn into a short story or something. So, because I know a lot of times folks they focus on it's something needs to be perfect. Well, it's interesting, because to one person, something may be perfect. To another person, they want nothing to do with that. So it's like, no matter what, you're in good hands, you know, so you might as well relax and let the, you know, let the process unfold, because there's always going to be someone out there, no matter what, who just will not like whatever's going around. There may be a bazillion people who love it, and there'll be another bazillion who hate it. So it's being okay with just simply creating the art that you're creating, because you want to create the art that you want to see out there in the world. And now with your own art, because I know when I was a little kid, when I would draw, I remember I'd be drawing, and I'd accidentally draw one leg bigger than the other. So then I go, oh, okay, well, okay, now I'll just make the other leg bigger, and then I'll paint his pants in black. Now he's got black pants.
Yeah. You know?
So now he's got two large legs instead of one big leg and one tiny leg. So I found some way to try to alter it to, you know, make it all work out. With your own art, do you find stuff like that too, where you're like, oops, I accidentally did that squiggle, but hey, wait, yeah, let's keep that.
Yes, all the time. Actually, my previous mentor, Jose Zelaya, used to say this thing with happy accidents, how his art revolves around it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it is. So... and that made me feel a lot lighter about my own art. I'm like, okay, so professionals do mess up too, but they do, it's not a cover up, but they use it. Well, they use it to benefit themselves.
Right, and that's a crazy thing too, because a lot of times we'll look at the Jimi Hendrixes of the world, the Albert Einsteins, but we forget that there was a process that they had to go through to get to that point. So... When you have that idea of like going, oh yeah, everyone deals with this.
Yeah.
It puts you at ease, you know.
Yeah, it's like you're not the only one who has little mess ups or anything, because how horrible would that be? It releases so much tension, which is so nice.
Yeah, because I mean, after all, like when you look at a little kid drawing, they're not... There's no analyzation.
No, they're not being specific or down on themselves or anything. They're just having a fun time, and they're interpreting what they see and how they see it onto a piece of paper. And I think something does happen when a little kid grows up and he's told by adults, no, that's not right, or you need to draw a certain way, or when they go into the career of animation or into art, suddenly your whole life depends on it, like money, career, reputation. And there's so much added pressure that it takes away the originality from them.
And the fun takes away
it drains the fun. And I'm kind of in that mix right now, where I'm trying to figure out, okay, so I could see that some of the fun was taken out of it over the past few years. Now, how do I get it back?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that process is going to be painful, but just realizing that I need to not worry about what other people think and just worry about, do I like it? Am I happy with it? Am I expressing what I want to express? Am I saying what I want to say?
Because otherwise there's an emptiness inside if it's created for the sole purpose of trying to, it's like, it's working from the outside in rather than working from the inside out. You know?
That's a really good point. There's something really genuine about a children's drawing that you don't see in many artists nowadays. I went to a Picasso exhibit museum with my friend Lark Eisenberg, and I was just totally mind blown. I haven't really studied his art. I've heard, oh yeah, Picasso, cool. And once I actually saw his art, it was because he knew how to draw. Age 14, I saw him do something that I could probably never do. I don't want to say that, but still, it was amazing. It was just a still life. And then to watch him maybe 30 years down the line or 40 years down the line, he drew this just amazing piece with a girl and like a matador. And it was breathtaking. It was like he almost went back. I don't know if that
makes
sense.
I see what you mean. Yeah, he went back to his basically maybe the original intention of just having fun with it.
Yeah, he had fun with it, and he was also able to express what was going on inside of him instead of looking outside and saying, what do these people want from me? What do they want to see? Instead, he trusted himself.
Yeah, that's what's so interesting. That's what's so interesting because, you know, that's what's so crazy because a lot of these artists, a lot of these writers wanted people to burn their work when they died. They're like, oh, no, this is terrible. This is crap. And it's like, whoa. Yet someone decided, like, for instance, Franz Kafka, all of his writing, he instructed someone to burn it all when he died. But that person was like, no way I'm not burning this. Just imagine if he had burned those books. We would not know what the Metamorphosis or The Castle or any of these kick-ass books or short stories that Franz Kafka, we'd never even know about any of that stuff if that stuff had been burned. Same thing with some of these artists. And it's like, it's funny because like we can look back on art that those people have done way back then that they were just purely creating just because they were passionate about creating it. And we go, oh, my God, that I'm mystified by that. Well, maybe in their brain, that was like, well, look, I barely put any effort into making this. Why do you love this so much? This one over here I spent seven years painting. You know, but it's like the amount of time I've realized that we put into something does not necessarily make us entitled to, how should I put it? Just because we put 7 years in a creative project does not mean that it's going to mystify the minds. And just because it takes us 5 seconds to draw something does not mean that it won't mystify the minds.
Yeah.
Or ourselves, you know.
It's funny with when you're talking about appreciation from others. It also varies from century to century. Like, let's say Picasso wasn't well known, like, during his century, and he wasn't appreciated. Just after he died, and to see like the big explosion of people loving his art, studying it, living by it, it's amazing. It's like only if those people knew. And why does it make a difference? Why does it matter? Like at some point of time, a piece of art has zero significance and could be thrown away. And then a century later, why is it all the rage? Why are people talking about it? Why is it in newspapers? Why is it known by millions and billions?
It's crazy how that can happen, right? I mean, each of these artists, with the beautiful thing is that they each had their own perspective. They each listened to a calling within their heart. I mean, my God, if Salvador Dali, I mean, you know, for as many people who, it's like, look, Salvador Dali is so far away, so different than Picasso, yet they can each be appreciated for their very own perspective. And I think that is something that's a very, very important thing, is to appreciate our own perspective, unapologetically commit to it, whatever that art is, and stand by it, because I realize that when we create the art that we want to see out there in the world, we're satisfying ourselves. So it really doesn't matter what any critic says whatsoever, because they don't know. They don't know what it was like to create that art, and you're not actually pandering to them at all. Anyway, you know, you're just like, you know what? This is what I created. This is what I wanted to create. I'm happy about this. Here we go. This is what I'm creating. And that's the other interesting thing, too. Like we were talking about earlier, something that's old to us is brand new to someone else. So, you know, let's say 20 years pass by. This happens all the time where years and years and years will pass by, and all of a sudden that film ends up becoming a cult film, and people love it, and they're going crazy. And that person who made that film 20 years ago, they're like, well, it was just me and my buddies in the garage. We just made this thing, and we had no idea that this would happen.
Right.
We had no idea. There was a, did you hear about the story about those kids? Those guys, they're older now, but when they were kids, they remade shot for shot Indiana Jones. Did you hear about that?
Oh, no, I didn't.
When they were little kids, right? But as they got older, as they got older, they still kept shooting it, right? So you see in some scenes, they're young, they're older, you know, but it keeps bouncing around. Mm-hmm. So years later, they decide to have a screening of this thing. People go nuts. And then it ends up becoming this thing that they're touring around
the
country with.
Fantastic.
That Steven Spielberg is showing up to.
That's the way it should be done. Shouldn't it? It's just out of pure joy, just being enthusiastic about it and wanting to do it rather than sitting down and racking your brain over thinking of an idea that you're going to hate making because you have to do it. So it's just a really, it's a beautiful thing.
And that vibe, I'm a firm believer in the fact that the original intention and the vibe that was put, that was stamped into whatever that project is, whether it's a painting, whether it's music, whether it's a book, that vibe is in there. So when people open that up, they feel that vibe. So imagine if you're creating this art with like a, oh, me, poor me, I'm such a victim, people probably won't like this. Now when people look at that, they're going to feel that. They're going, okay, I like this, but there's something off about it. I don't know what it is, but it feels like they weren't fully committed to this, or they were, you know,
yeah,
there's
yeah.
something. We're like, oh, it feels like it was forced. Well, yeah, it probably was. It probably was, you know, the person's like, tortured over this thing. I'm going to play a song right now by Grimes that you directed me to, and I love this story. This song is Oblivion, and, we'll get back to the story after I play this, but it's a good one, so here we go.
Oh, In the 1960 movie Psycho by Alfred Hitchcock, chocolate syrup was used to show blood in the shower scene. Also, it was the first American film to show a flushing toilet. Stay tuned to Inspirato Projecto for more fun facts.
I have two grown daughters who elected to go to very, very expensive colleges. You probably know how that goes. And each of them at their very, very expensive colleges. That wasn't about you. It really wasn't. And each of them at their very, very expensive colleges took a turn at improvisational comedy because everybody wants to be famous. I learned from them that the trick to improv is to adopt a conversational pose in front of a room full of strangers, hoping to be calm and cool, while other equally anxious actors stand in front of a crowd, throwing fastballs at your head. Catching those fastballs is the hard work of comedy. Catching them in a way that extends the joke, multiplies the laugh, challenges the next actor, sets up the pitch, that's the trick. And how's it done? With a simple conversational device. Yes, and? The first comedian pitches some ludicrous assertion or statement, angling for a laugh or hoping to trip the other one. And regardless of how bizarre, far-fetched, or false the assertion might be, the next the comedian reaches for it and says, yes, and? Yes, and saves a comedy sketch. It can even save a marriage. 2 nights ago, I met with a couple whose wedding I presided at a few months ago. They came to me because they were at an impasse over an issue that had vexed them from the day they had met. As they started to relate the current iteration of the impasse, they kept interrupting each other. Yeah, 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 but no, that's not right. Let me tell it. We're engaging Olympic quality eye rolling and heavy sighs. Their trouble is not terminal. Their marriage is good, but their marriage skills are still being honed. They are learning to accept rather than to judge. They are learning to listen before they speak. They are learning to say yes before they say no. They are learning to say and instead of but. They are learning to improvise, as are you.
What we just heard there, I edit wedding videos, and this was an officiant who was talking about improvisation, which I thought was so fantastic, because many times on the show I've talked about improvisation. In fact, as the universe would have it, we happen to have a conversation about improv here before we started the broadcast, and I thought it was so cool that this woman decided to talk about improvisation. The main rule, the only rule really that you have to follow with an improv is just yes and. All it is finding a way to cooperate on creating the same reality, and the only way to do that is to accept one another's ideas and go yes and you just keep building on it. Because the more that you two or three or whoever's up on stage is tuned into that specific reality, the audience sees it. The audience will see that reality that you're bringing forth because it is real for both of you. Now, what I blended that with was this song by a guy named Diego Stacco called Music from Nature. Now, what you heard back there, this guy, he recorded himself playing pieces of nature. So like when you hear those are like little seeds being poured into something. When you hear that, those are little branches that are being scraped with other branches. And so I thought that was fantastic because I would say the main root of just nature as we know it is yes and. It takes what's there and it builds upon it. So I thought it was a lot of fun to be able to stick nature, which is one of my hugest teachers in life. Nature, animals, and children. Those are my main mentors. And so when I stick this whole philosophy of yes and along with the music of nature, it's just great. It all fits together. Now, we also heard a fun fact from Henry D. Horse about the movie Psycho. Also, we heard a song by Grimes called Oblivion. Now, Ciara, you were telling me earlier about how she ended up coming across just making music in the first place.
Yeah, it's a really amazing story. Very simple, actually. Someone asked her if she would sing for a band and or just for vocals, and she said, no, I don't sing. And the guy really asked her, hey, it's just vocals, it's just this one small little part, would you mind? And she's like, okay, I'll do it. And she ended up doing it and actually really liking it. So she just toyed around and toggled on GarageBand, and she really clicked with it and ended up making amazing music like what we just heard. And it's very inspiring. It makes me want to do the same thing. I've been playing on GarageBand a little bit too.
Fantastic. That, you know, that's what's so cool is that we were talking earlier about how, like, now, oh my gosh, and it's so exciting. No longer does any artist, musician, filmmaker, no longer do they have any excuse to not be doing what they absolutely love to be doing. You know, with cell phones that have video cameras on them, with GarageBand that you can make, you got an entire orchestra behind you. You can create what you want to create, how you want to create it. And so there's no longer that excuse of going, I'd love to make this album, but I don't have, you know, $30,000 to spend in a studio to do this thing. Well, good news, guess what? Download this free app of GarageBand.
Yeah.
Just make something in your bedroom. You know, and we listen to these recordings, you know, from long ago, just to think that they had, quote, lesser, unquote, technology than we do today, yet it still sounds phenomenal. Well, okay, well, go ahead and just take out, if you don't have GarageBand, take out your cell phone and just put it right there, or get a tape recorder or something, hit record and make, you know, make something, you know?
Yeah.
So it's so cool when you hear stories like that of people who just go, you know what, I'm a go-getter. I have a feeling, I'm going to create something. Here we go. We're just going to go ahead and do it. Because she probably had no idea that it was going to grow into this kind of thing.
No,
she probably thought she'd just send the songs around to her friends.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't even know if she knew exactly what she was doing, but whatever she was doing, it worked. And now she has like hundreds of thousands of views, and people love her, including myself. And it's like what we were talking about before, finding something instantaneously versus having to do something and having that pressure on you.
Yeah, when you have that intuition and you have that, when you have your own back, when you have your own back and you know you got your own back, what's awesome is it prepares you. It's like your own utility belt that when you go off exploring, you're like, okay, no matter what happens, I know that I can improvise along with this. I know that I can adapt to this. I know that no matter what happens, I can turn the, you know, I will find the gold. I will sift through whatever is happening, and I will find those gold pieces. I will find those happy accidents. I will find those things that will help, you know, help keep moving me forward. And when we do that, oh my gosh, amazing things just keep opening up for us. It's like the universe sees that we're going forward. Just as anyone, we were talking about this earlier, like when I find myself applying my relationship with the universe in a very human level, in a very golden rule kind of level, where I'm going, okay, if I knew someone who claimed to be an actor, for instance, and yet I continually offered them opportunities to utilize their acting skills, or other people offered them skills, and they're like, no, I'm not getting paid for that, so I'm not going to do that, or, oh, no, I don't want to do that. Yet here's a person over here who's just, they already got their own YouTube channel. They're already just doing what they love doing,
mm-hmm.
whether anyone's watching or not. I might go with that person who's already trained,
yeah.
so to speak, who's been exercising, right? I'm not going to ask the person who's sitting down to go run a marathon. I'm going to ask the person who's already been running around the block, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm like, okay, cool. You're in the habit of running around the block? Cool. Here's the marathon. So I apply that same kind of idea to the universe in itself. It's like, okay, I see that you're helping yourself. I see that you're being daring. You're moving forward. I'm gonna keep helping you out. Here we go. I see that you're happy with that. Here we go. Let's give you some more of that. And because I realize that by us trusting ourselves, we're in a sense trusting the universe, or as they say, our higher minds, to bring us along the path. God, it's just. And I love the fact that K-Chung even exists, that we can talk about these kinds of things, because these are the kinds of talks that I've been I've been wanting to hear out there in the media. And if no one else is going to do it, you know, I'm creating the art I want to see in the world, right?
Yeah, why not?
we get to have these amazing people in here. We got Nicholas over there piloting the ship, who is, it's all cooperation. It's all collaboration. We're all in it together, and we want to see good things happen, you know? If we were here with a very competitive mindset or a very ego-based mindset, it'd be very different, you know? Because, Nicholas would be like, no, I'm the cool guy here. You listen to what I'm doing. I don't like what you're saying. I'm going to turn his volume down, you know? Or, I only want to hear what she has to say. So every time he talks, like, a little mute button. But no, he's here. We're all cooperating and collaborating on this. And it just turns into this crazy, extraordinary thing. You have no idea which way it's going to go next, who's going to walk in the door, who's going to call on the phone. I mean, it's just so fun when you just let yourself be a part of the process. Like, okay, here we are on the whitewater raft. Who knows where the rampage is taking us? Here we go. But no matter what happens, we're going to have a good time. Because, oh, look at those trees. Oh, look at, I see a trout. Oh, hey, look at that. There's Bigfoot. But you would have never seen those things had you not just jumped on it and let's just see where it goes. God, I just love it. All right, so before we end here, I promised that and Nicholas is cool. He's letting us go till 2:15. So I promised that I'd get this in here. This is the Celebrity Afterlife Report. So I'm going to play this, and then we're going to come back with some more great cosmic talk. And raising the vibration as we know it. So here we go. Celebrity Afterlife Report, reporting to you from the Celebrity Afterlife Medium, letting you know all the latest gossip of what's going on in the afterlife.
Is the Celebrity Afterlife Report podcast. question about your favorite deceased celebrity, call 818-3-MY-DREAM. 818-3-MY-DREAM. 818-369-3732.
Here's your fun fact. The 1976 film Rocky was shot in 28 days. Also, Sylvester Stallone was so poor, he had to sell his dog for $50. A week later, he sold the script for Rocky and bought the dog back for $3,000. Stay tuned to Inspirato Projecto for more fun facts.
Sierra introduced me to. We also heard another amazing Celebrity Afterlife report and also a fun fact from Henry D. Horse. Like this band, for instance, when you hear these bands that have this specific kind of perspective where you cannot trace the pedigree, I'll use that for the lack of a better word, where you cannot trace the pedigree from where their inspiration sprouts from. In other words, I cannot listen, like, there's nothing in that song where I can go, they're totally copying, you know, I don't know, Fleetwood Mac there, or they're totally copying, you know, freaking Twisted Sister here or whatever. They're just dialed into their own sound. I applaud anyone who's just willing to just create, you know, just carve their own path, and it just excites the hell out of me. How'd you come across the Fukarias? That's even how you pronounce it. I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't really know how to pronounce it either, but I just came across it off of YouTube when I was listening to a couple of other bands. I think I was really obsessed with the Dandy Warhols at the time and Grimes, and I think it just came up and it caught my eye. I saved it and I replay it over and over again.
I love that. I love when it, you know, when those videos will pop up that are completely unexpected and you're going, oh my gosh, look at this gem. I had no idea this even existed here, but I only found it simply by accident, right?
Yeah.
I'm putting the accident in quotes, but I found it by pure surprise. It wasn't something I set out to look for.
Yeah, and it's something that just affects you and it changes what you want to do and how you think of things and different ways of doing things. It's really cool and it's amazing with YouTube and just Instagram and all of the other choices we have. You can explore new things so easily.
Now, you're saying you've been playing around in GarageBand. Do you have anything on your phone or anything with you that you can share?
No, not really. I've just been messing around. I'm not a very musical person. I've never played an instrument before. I've never sang before.
Well, there you go. And I think that's the cool thing is because you don't have a history in any of those things, you now get to decide what it is to be a musician. So you get, you know, now the power's in your hands. You're like, okay, I don't have to compare myself, you know, I don't have to, I can just simply go, all right, you know what, I don't know what I'm doing now, but here's a drum beat.
Yeah, it's amazing. Even going back to David Lynch, he's known for his, like, for his films and for his, like, Twin Peaks and everything like that, but he's also a singer, which is really amazing.
So you've heard his music,
yeah,
like his
I
albums,
have.
Just brilliant.
Yeah.
It's so cool that he's creating that as another medium.
And it's like he's not really like the typical singer, like Beyonce or anyone else like that. But he has his own unique sound, and he's just bold enough and brave enough to make his own thing. And I think that's so exciting, and there's nothing better than that. And that's, like, also with Grimes, why I like her music so much. It's very mystical and very different. It's, even though she is in the pop genre, it is very different from all of the other pop singers. You can't really distinguish where she came from, like what you were saying earlier.
You can tell when there's a higher calling. We've talked about this on the show before, actually. The idea of when you follow a calling, there's no wrong answer, really, because you're like, if we were to hear, for instance, if we hear something going on down the hallway, we hear some music, and we go, huh, and we just simply follow the sound to where we hit the epicenter, where that's coming from, we go, okay, here it is. Now, if we create our art that way, our whatever it is that we're creating, in such a way where it's following a calling, now you really get to carve a path that might not have been seen before, because and it's not something where it's a forced thing, and it's not a what if I don't do it, what if it doesn't turn out right. Well, those questions don't even answer your head, because you're simply following what's magnetizing you towards it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes this own entity. And so it sounds to me like this, I mean, with you and whatever you're messing with on GarageBand, I mean, once you, you know, even if you only make some 30-second thing, I would hope that you would email it to me so I could play it on the show.
I totally will.
Because I've played tons of just riffs that had just, like, you know, like, oh, this sounds, oh, these chords sound good. Okay, let me just go ahead and record that, you know, and I got maybe a minute or 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I go, all right, cool. You know what? Let's go ahead and play it on the show, you know, because it's, you know, once again, it's about the process, you know, it's about the unfolding of what, you know, of the unknown. Now listen, we got about a minute left here. Any other special things that you'd like to say to anyone? Any people maybe you'd like to say hi to? Maybe.
Oh, okay. I'd like
anybody.
To say hi to my friend Jessica Bibb, if she's out there. She's studying for finals.
That's awesome.
Or supposed to be studying. But that's about it.
That's about it. All right. Well, I'd like to say hello to David Lynch, because I'd like to trust that sometime in the future, or now. It's a future, in a future now, you're listening to this and getting a kick out of us talking about you. And also, I'm going to make this prediction that our future selves are working with you on your next project, whether it be music or movie-oriented or even painting-oriented. So hello to David Lynch, to your past self, your current self, and your future self. All right, we're going to skedaddle. And God, thank you again, Ciara, for coming in and carving time out of your day to be here on the radio.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome, and you're welcome back at any time, at any time. I mean, the invitation goes out there to any of you awesome folks who have been in here and spent time in the K-Chung Studios. Sayonara. We'll talk more later. Bye-bye.